job yet. I'm ready whenever y'all are.
Christian, did he contact me?
No, I sent you his email because you always send the link.
Oh, I don't. When did you do that?
Probably weeks ago. So you're gonna have to shift through.
Where did you do that?
Text.
Text.
Yeah.
Oh
my God, we text so much.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how the hell I'm gonna find that. It could be on Instagram.
I'll look for it myself.
Is it in his book?
No. It's his email in his book.
I mean, people do that,
actually,
right?
Is it?
That sounds like a good idea, doesn't it, at this point? Just put
there
your Instagram in your book.
You found it in the book? What page?
Found it in the text.
The text.
And I thought it was so funny that I said, Rob will send you. And he was like, oh, it will just be him interviewing. And I thought, man, Rob was the sole interviewer. That would be a pretty interesting podcast.
I mean,
I've been on your podcast when you were the sole interviewer. You've interviewed
so
me as
the
sole interviewer.
Yeah. So is Jennifer.
Oh, it was interesting. I thought that you had, I thought you had what's her name there.
No, she did it the first time. And then you started talking about mommy bloggers and you're like, I'm not going to talk about that. And I was like, I want to talk about the mommy bloggers. And I brought you back on. But then we just talked about you cutting yourself and stuff instead.
Yeah.
That's what we talked about.
I bring out the best in people. What can I say? All right. Are you sending me his email again?
I texted
it
to you again.
Okay. Let's see. I hate emailing.
Kristen Chiacula. Oh, it's like super easy too. It's just his name at gmail.com.
Yeah. It basically is in his book then.
God. Trying to copy email addresses is one of the worst fucking things. If you don't use a mail app.
Especially if you like try to do it from like the link and it always has the mail too.
Yeah. Well, that's what the text messages do automatically.
I used to have to send emails for something at work. I don't even remember what the task was, but I would have to like copy paste emails and then like send some bullshit thing. Except the email addresses always had periods at the end of them. So Gmail would freak out every time. And then it like doesn't want you to edit it. Like you have to like click into it to edit it. You can't just like backspace and get.
Yeah.
And it
was just, you have like, to right click edit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not a nightmare. I guess that's a very much like a non-real problem, but it certainly made me feel like a crazy person.
Yeah, I've tried at my job to automate as much as possible. And I guess you can automate stuff in Google, but I just can't figure it out. Like you need to download like a million fucking extensions and learn the code in their language. And with like Excel, I just record what I'm doing and then I just cut down the code, just cut out all the scrolling.
I'm waiting to take the plunge to ask ChatGPT to like start writing my headlines.
I mean, just do it. Who gives a shit?
Commerce writing might as well be ChatGPT already. Like,
I mean, what's that
like,
one?
Sell me a television.
CNET does it already. AP was doing it years ago, weren't they?
Yeah, probably.
My company, like, I had to make location pages for a few of these franchises, but nobody would give me descriptions of them. So I finally used the Bing chatbot to just write me copy for the pages describing them.
Yeah. And I can tell you, like, now the only places you can get, like, honest reviews on whatever products is on Reddit. Like, if you, like, look through people's posts and people are like,
it's weird.
I didn't like this. Or
I'm always confused why everything has a Reddit. Like, why does IKEA have a Reddit? Do the companies create these Reddits, or are people just doing free labor for these companies now?
Yes.
Why?
Like,
both.
Yeah, but yeah, I didn't realize. Yeah, is it just the people or is it the companies? Because I see like really obscure.
They get like knockoffs because I've seen a lot of different people get mad and they like start offshoots. Like, I think that's really what it stands for. Or like maybe there's like the professional McDonald's one. So people are like, I want to tell dick jokes about McDonald's. So we're going to start the McDonald's fans Reddit.
Donald's fan Reddit. You remember when the internet was just like forums for bands you like and stuff and not just offshoots of corporate forums?
Oh, what a time. What a time. Yeah. You got to see when your band was playing and there was a bunch of porn and that was pretty much it.
Yeah. But the greatest was like fan forums for bands, because like it would just be some guy would buy server space and then eventually they'd get tired of hosting it and paying for it. So they would just stop and then all of that shit is gone.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Like one day you log in and then it would just be like, it would be nothing.
Yeah. That was such a better time to be a teenager online.
It was. Yeah.
I don't know. I was in a pretty dark corner of the internet. Y'all were having a good time. I was on LiveJournal and they were telling you the right way to cut yourself to die. So.
I got that from skate magazines.
Yeah. I mean, people. Yeah, that's where I learned about the. Well, actually, I learned about the anarchist cookbook from people in real life, but I would post it on those websites.
Yeah. Oh, that was.
And, I mean, I was like watching people die on the internet at that time, but it was better than cloud chasing, I think.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I went to rotten.com, which was an awful website. Yeah. I could not go to it today.
Yeah, yeah, that doesn't interest me in the least. Quite the opposite now, but at the time, I don't know. This is what 9/11 does to you.
Right.
That's probably right.
That's
like especially when they started talking about it. It's like
that was the first time I ever saw the wife go out of anybody's eyes was like then, because of footage from like
and then the news talking about like beheadings, like beheadings.
That was what I first saw. That was the first
it
thing
went
I
viral.
Fucking, like, yeah, like
yeah, I remember like Howard Stern.
I sat with my dad and grandfather and watched a documentary where they had that like they had that footage. Like this is just
what documentary. You know,
I don't know. I don't know where that came from. I never found it again. I was like 12.
They were watching Alex Jones then.
I don't think it was from Blockbuster. That's all I can tell you.
Oh yeah, they had. I remember going to the flea market and they had Alex Jones on VHS. It was like
really.
It was like it would say like it wouldn't have Alex Jones on the cover yet, but it would be like by documentarian Alex Jones. It would be like the New World Order and like what's the thing they're also scared of, the single world currency.
Aren't they all about Bitcoin now though? Or
what
I guess
yeah, are you going to here? Where is this? Like, are they being? Where were these being sold? I don't remember seeing
flea market, Polk
market. Oh, flea market. Like, oh, I was saying, okay, so like,
No, Polk County, Tennessee. You could also get illegal exotic pets there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not like tigers or anything, but like the little ones, like exotic, like
ferrets,
swine. Yeah.
I remember liking Alex Jones when I was a teenager, like 15 years ago, because nobody took him seriously. Is this the right person? Oh, it's the right last name.
That's his wife's name.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I mean, Alex Jones, like all the comedians would go on his web show, like Doug Stanhope and Patrice O'Neill and everything. Yeah. It's fun.
And then he realizes comedians weren't so hot. So,
yeah.
Hi, how's it going?
Hey.
Okay. You're on mute.
I got to say, looking at you, I'm not surprised you're a bass player.
You're a bass player, right, Rob?
Well, yeah. But
just a... Yeah.
Yeah, it's still okay. I'm just.
I recognize the same look in the eyes.
Sorry about that. Yes. I don't use Zoom very often. So.
Yeah, yeah, nobody really does except for us. I mean, even we don't use
it. I use it for you all. I've been using it more recently for job interviews, and I use it every Friday night on where is she, professor? I think at UMass, and we use her professional teacher Zoom that she uses for her school and class and stuff to play our little fucking samurai tabletop game.
Oh, that's actually how Chung A and I started dating, like during the pandemic before we met. She would just use her school Zoom to set up like the video dates.
For D&D? You guys will play D&D during dates?
No.
Oh.
Rob wouldn't play D&D. Rob's not a D&D guy. I can tell.
I don't have that kind of
he has no imagination. Yeah, your imagination's fucking weird. It wouldn't work with the dice rolls.
Anyway, sorry. Hello, Christian.
Thank you guys for wanting to, I don't know, talk to me. I listen to some of your podcasts, and you guys have a lot of good rapport.
Well, it's great. Yeah, thanks for being on. I read your book. I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of I had a lot of fun reading it. I don't know. It's always really refreshing, and it's super interesting to get kind of a materialist perspective on something that's like, you know, for better or for worse, that has been like mythologized for so long. And like, it's really cool to kind of like just get that historical analysis of it. It's fascinating. It's really fun.
I'm glad you think so. A lot of people get very angry at me for it. Tell me I'm like going to hell, not a real Christian, stuff like that.
Right.
Well, I'm used to that. I don't even like it. Doesn't even faze me. Does it? Like when people say I'm going to hell, like it means nothing to me. They could be telling me that you know their favorite flavor of ice cream is. I'm just like, cool. Thanks.
You don't believe in hell though, right? Is that right, Jennifer?
No.
Okay.
So it's like, you don't either, Christian. From what I gathered, right? Like you don't really see the book by. Right. I can't really tell like what exactly. You seem to explicitly state it, but then my memory is horrible. So you don't seem to explicitly believe in a lot. You seem like more of like a Spinoza, like Spinoza was a Judas, you seem to Christianity. Like you'd seem to believe in like some underlying thing, but like not really any of the magic or the current conservative history of like 5,000 years and all that bullshit. Like you seem very grounded in your beliefs about Jesus and Christianity.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I've never been compared to Spinoza before. That's
well, just the first thing that comes to mind because he was doing a sort of similar thing of just intellectualizing, and he referred to like the natural light of reason and all this, and people are like, oh, well, he's an atheist, but he did seemingly have an affection and belief there. But and that's sort of what I gathered from what you were doing. Like, what actually do you believe necessarily? Like, where, like, what, like, do you believe in God? I guess is a good start point.
So I'll start by giving like the infuriating like philosophy answer, which is what does it mean to believe in God, right?
Right.
I'm not trying to be annoying, but like I like part of me wants to say yes, but like I always feel like I need to qualify that with like because I don't believe in God, I think, the way that the majority of Christians do when they say that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, you know, it's hard to give like a quick response to. So yes and no, I guess.
So is it, so like the reason I keep thinking about Spinoza is because like his sort of thing is referring to God as like sort of like a force, like the forces of nature, like the spirit of life, essentially. You would always say like the natural light of reason. Is that sort of what it is? Like not like an anthropomorphized figure, but like just sort of a like ever like just life, I guess, to some degree.
I think for me, I did go through a period where I think that would have been the best way to describe it, right? But more recently I've come to like a pretty strongly agnostic or even like verging on atheistic idea of God, where you know, I've called myself a Christian atheist before. Sometimes
one of my friends who is like big into like the atheist circles, like the like what would you call it, I guess, even I don't know, but she was big like in like big skeptical who's that guy, Herman Monmont. She was she was big in atheist circles, and she said Christian atheist is a slur.
That's funny. Wait,
against who?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting. I've never heard it be used as a slur before. You know, for me, I had very much more like traditional Christian theistic beliefs, but when I started like studying the historical Jesus, it kind of wrecked it for me, honestly. So I've been deconstructing that ever since, probably about 10, 11 years at this point.
I have a cool question about that. In your book, you mentioned that you kind of like you got into Marxism and you became a communist like through Christianity, and it was more that You said that your Christian beliefs kind of informed your like kind of sympathies and tendencies towards Marxism rather than the other way around.
Right.
Which I found which I found fascinating, because I feel like it's usually the opposite. Like for me specifically, like I was raised Christian and then I just kind of went the whole atheist route, and it was like it was getting into Marxism and kind of recontextualizing like the gospels and like and sort of like what those are supposed to teach, like, you know, kind of like the advocacy for the poor in the Bible, that kind of got me around to sympathizing with like Christianity again. But like, how did you, but I had to like, I had to break through all that kind of like liberal nonsense about Marxism and communism in order for me to do that.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to like how you were able to do that, like, or if Christianity kind of like actually helped you kind of deconstruct that, like those, like that anti-communist falsehoods.
I don't know. That's an interesting, I guess I never looked at it that way before. For me, what it was so I was learning about Jesus, like from a historical perspective. Right. And I got really into, the stuff that was written by like John Dominic Crossan and like Marcus Borg. And they come at it from like a pretty, they were good, like historical Jesus scholars, but they were pretty liberal, like in terms of their politics. And
do you mind if I go back just a little bit and kind of ask like how you got interested in kind of studying Jesus from a historical perspective? Cause I feel like a lot of Christians that I grew up with that knew like weren't like, that just didn't interest them at all.
Yeah. That's a good question. I guess I would read the Bible, and I didn't have like a very Christian upbringing. I was raised somewhat secular, like culturally Christian.
Okay.
But I got into reading the Bible as a teenager, just kind of on my own, and I didn't understand it. Like, I didn't have any guides to be like, this is what this means. So I went to the library and went to the section on Christianity, and like, that was the stuff on Jesus was the stuff that interested me the most. Like, it grabbed my attention. I was like, okay, let's learn about this. Right. So it was really, it was really just trying to understand what the hell, like, I didn't know what a Pharisee was. Cause if you just read the Bible with no background, you're like, what is, you know,
yeah.
So stuff like that. I really wanted to understand that, and beyond just like Googling it. So that's where it came from.
Can you tell us that the wrong assumptions about Pharisees while we're here, just so we can have it on air?
Yes, please, please.
Yeah. You want me to go off on that? I don't know. There's this tendency you see among Christians, and I see it from like progressive Christians too. All kinds of Christians. I'm not just blaming progressive Christians, but you know, because Jesus in the Gospels is kind of portrayed as like butting heads with the Pharisees a lot, I feel like it's become, I don't want to say slur because that's kind of a loaded word, but like you see, you know, Pharisee used interchangeably with like hypocrite or like, you know, a fake religious person or someone who's deceitful. And I mean, most Christians don't know this because they don't really know that much about Judaism, but Pharisaic Judaism is kind of the forerunner of modern Judaism. That's what we generally think of. So it's kind of this way of, indirectly, it kind of casts aspersions on like all of modern Judaism, which is fucked up. And I mean, a lot of it also, the clashes between Jesus and the Pharisees in the Gospels are, according to most like secular or non-conservative biblical scholars, they're pretty overblown. Like, they reflect later conflicts between early Christians and Pharisaic Jews. They don't actually reflect like how Jesus would have seen the Pharisees.
Do you think that was like kind of like a calculated like narrative to try to, like, I remember in your book, you were talking about how like after like the execution, like after Jesus' execution, like there was like kind of an effort to sort of like, I don't think de-Jewify is a word, but like to kind of like distance Christianity from like, and to sort of like at the same time, kind of like, you know, like rehabilitate like Pontius Pilate and the Roman Empire and stuff. Like, would you say that like that kind of like the Pharisees were kind of like a scapegoat? Because that's what it sounds like to me. Is like it makes sense that like with the kind of like de facto anti-Semitism by kind of like reframing like Jesus's crucifixion as like being because of the Jews as opposed to the Romans.
Yeah. And you see that like how The Jews are blamed for like getting Jesus crucified in the first place, mm-hmm. right? And
and the nice Roman man washed his hands of it.
Yeah,
and tried to save Jesus.
He almost considered it for a second. Like
his hands were tied. There was just nothing.
Yeah,
he could
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
He was just the governor of the province.
Yeah, you know? he was just doing his job. You know?
Typical liberal
orders.
But yeah, no, I think. Well, I think also I do think that the Pharisees probably started criticizing the early Christians, like on their own.
You mean like the kingdom movement?
Yeah, like the early, you know, the first century, because a lot of Gentiles had come in, and you know, you see this in like Paul's letters where he's talking about how they don't need to follow the dietary restrictions, they don't need to be circumcised. So that the Pharisees were probably not happy about that, and they probably did start, you know, those first couple of generations of Christians were butting heads with the Pharisees. And then they, when the Gospels were being compiled and written, those conflicts that were, you know, were a few decades after the life of mm-hmm. Jesus were kind of like written back into the story of Jesus.
Right.
Okay. Because you can see some of those conflicts, like there's somewhere in Mark, it'll say that he was arguing with like, you know, random people,
mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when you get to Matthew and Luke, which were written later, sometimes they'll change it to Pharisees.
Right. Okay. Wow. I just found it fascinating that you kind of explored, like, you know, like as Marxists, we understand that, like, you know, every narrative has an implicit bias somewhere.
Yeah.
And like, the fact that you were kind of able to do that, like, kind of like just like analyze the, like the historical bias that you know, that the Gospels were written in was like fascinating to me. I think I like one of my favorite parts was when you were kind of dissecting the supposed nonviolence of Jesus and like the, you know, when you were kind of dissecting like what it actually means to like turn the other cheek, that it's not necessarily like, you know, an admission like, you know, to for further violence. It's like to be treated like an equal.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was fascinating. I'd never heard of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not like original analysis. I think Walter Wink was the first one to write about that. So, I mean, a lot of what's in my book is just, you know, taking stuff that other people, smarter people than me, figured out and kind of putting them together in a new way. Because, I mean, that's the thing. I think actually a new one was just published like in the last couple of months. But I don't think any like explicitly Marxist take on Jesus had been published.
Right.
Mine, at least not that I could find. There were Marxist books on like early Christianity and on like related topics, but none that like specifically used the kind of methods of reconstructing the historical Jesus that have developed over the last 50 or so years.
Mm. That's surprising, because I feel like that's what I've always heard is like, Jesus was a hippie, Jesus was a socialist, like everything Jesus was teaching was basically on some level like a very far left sort of teaching of acceptance and all of this. And it's interesting, I guess I've always heard that colloquially, but like there's no real, you haven't found any writing in your time that's like sort of approaches things about Jesus that way.
I don't mean to answer, but I will say, just having grown up not just with like theological conservatives, but like in my family, people studied conservative theology. People had degrees in it. My grandfather had an MDiv, and there's so much more like conservative theology about what Jesus meant and like what. And so like people may have said, like people usually not Christians and almost never actual scholars would come and be like, yeah, Jesus was a socialist or Jesus was a hippie. Like it would just be like mostly non-Christians who would be like, Jesus was a hippie, you guys are hypocrites, which right. is true.
I guess that's true. Yeah. Like George Collins.
But like nobody had this historical backup for it, as far as I know, for like a long time. Cause I remember reading several sources of, you know, like Republican Christian politic from a theological perspective, not a modern American one, but just like on, you know, the need of sort of just like Christian superiority, like a little bit of like it was dominionism, which is a little bit like Christian nationalism, just the idea that Christians are supposed to have dominion over the land and other people and stuff like that.
Are you guys aware of anything that sort of dissects how this conservative understanding of Christianity came to be or became to be the dominant form? I mean, is it just like a continuous line going back to like the Catholic Church and all these other things, or is it still like a fairly modern conception of Christianity? Or
I think I do see the, you know, the in the 4th century when Constantine made Christianity like the official religion of the, that's actually not what happened. He made it legal, but so that's kind of, and like when the Nicene Creed was like formulated and they said this is the official creed, and if you know you're a heretic if you don't believe this, that's what I think a lot of Christians like of the more progressive Protestant bent point to say like this is the moment. I know that like John Dominic Crossan, who was a big influence on me in his like work on historical Christianity, he focuses on like that as the turning point a lot. There's this Scottish Marxist named Alistair Key, who I was just reading his book on liberation theology. I haven't read it, but he wrote a whole book about how like Constantine was the one who perverted Christianity away from its like radical original. And I think that's like a little simplistic. I think there's more to it than that, but like I understand, you know, taking this movement that was based on like opposition to the Roman Empire and then like having the Roman Emperor join that movement is like, it's a symbolically, I understand why people would want to say like this is the moment, you know.
I'm curious about how it felt for you to kind of like go into like to really kind of analyze Jesus from this like historical materialist perspective. I feel like if it was me doing so, and like I adhered to a specific faith, I feel like that might be kind of like a scary thing to really like dissect that and to kind of like as a result, did you feel like you were like analyzing your own faith as well while you were doing it, like to kind of like put it within a historical like scope to see like what sticks and what doesn't?
I think that for me, the scary part was when I first like started studying this subject, because like I'm like that wrecked the Christian faith that I had had before that moment. Like, it just like completely destroyed me to like read that, you know, Jesus didn't actually say all these things that I thought he said, and that like
really okay, yeah.
I mean, that my older faith was a house of cards, honestly, because it was just like taking for granted a lot of really basic Christian doctrines without thinking about them. But when I, you know, when it came time to like actually look at it from a more Marxist perspective and write the book, I had already been doing a lot of that like deconstructive work for a while. So I felt more confident at that point, just looking at my own. But, you know, I also like, I know a lot of Christian leftists and communists even, and Marxists even, but like I go farther than most of them that I know, just in terms of my, like rejecting like the resurrection and things like that, like as a historical reality. So in that sense, like it's always, I get pushback from that from even a lot of like more left leaning people.
Right. And I mean, like Rob, like you mentioned that, like, it seems surprising that like a lot of people haven't kind of like taken this, like, this historical perspective into analyzing Jesus in terms of like whether or not he was a socialist. But like your book itself, like the, you know, the assertions that you make when you adhere to that kind of materialist like ideology are like, they become pretty controversial. It sounds almost taboo to like, you know, to admit that like he was a human and like he, like the resurrection did not happen, and you know, he wasn't like, even I felt like the concept that he wasn't preaching apocalypse feels like very kind of against the grain.
That was interesting too, because I mean, that's something that like I don't feel like everybody even necessarily believes. Like a lot of more like traditional, not traditional, but like more secular leaning Christians, I don't think they necessarily believe in the apocalypse or anything. But I never even occurred to me how much that's discussed in there. But sorry, back to your question, Brandon.
I was just going to say, like, the apocalypse thing, even among, like, totally non-Christian, secular Jesus, like, historians, it's pretty much the consensus that he did preach the apocalypse, right? That he was an apocalyptic preacher. Mm. And I, there are like some professional historians who go against the grain on that. And I agree with those ones generally more. But yeah, I mean, that's even controversial, whether or not you believe in the apocalypse, like, you know, the question of whether Jesus preached the apocalypse or what kind of apocalypse he preached is pretty controversial.
I can definitely see like the ideological reasons for wanting to like promote that narrative that he was like he preached apocalypse, because like I feel like that's like, you know, that becomes very a passive analysis of what is to be done with things. It's like, you know, you get to kind of wait for some deus ex machina to kind of like make things better rather than like actually like having to take up responsibility in doing things on your own and to bring the, you know, the kingdom, as it says, like, you know, that already exists, to materialize that here.
I mean, it also sort of seems to relate to something else. I mean, I read about half the book, or maybe a little bit over half, because I just don't have time. But I noticed, like, one thing you kept saying was, like, people kept sort of reinterpreting these things based on older things in the Bible, it seemed like, to some degree. And, like, when you think about the apocalypse, preaching the apocalypse, I mean, it just sounds like Noah, again, to some extent, just...
Mm.
Like, we're just going to wipe everything, wipe out everybody because it's all fucked.
And even also like Daniel, you know, the book of Daniel was like an early Jewish apocalypse. And there's other apocalyptic literature that, like, you know, if you read like Revelation and Daniel, you'll see a lot of similarities, and there's other stuff. So it was like a whole genre. You know, that's the thing that's like so interesting about Jesus. So most of the stuff in my book is not like original scholarship, right? It's not like, you know, I went and took all these ancient scrolls and like discovered something new about them. It's pulling together research that, you know, other people have done and just putting it through a new lens. But I think one of the arguments that I make that I haven't seen anyone else make before is that, like, if you accept that Jesus is an apocalyptic prophet the way that most scholars do, I think that Christianity becomes pretty inexplicable, because Jesus was not, like, there were lots of apocalyptic, it was an age of apocalypticism. Mm-hmm. There were tons of other Jewish apocalyptic figures that were very superficially similar to him. We know some of their names because of like ancient historians, and there were probably a lot more whose names are just lost to history, but like only one of them, you know, founded the biggest religion ever, right?
Right.
And like, you know, Christians would generally say, well, that's because of the resurrection, right? But but like if I go from the starting point that like we're just going to do this as a completely scientific, no miracles, no supernatural, just assume the resurrection didn't happen, like what's another way we could explain the rise of Christianity, given right. that Jesus was not that unique of a figure in some ways?
And I feel like I read in your book that John the Baptist, his movement was apocalyptic. Is that right?
Well, that's one of those things. It's hard to say. It's it's assumed that it's apocalyptic, right?
Okay.
But it's assumed that it's apocalyptic because the gospels say it is. And that's, that's used as evidence that Jesus was apocalyptic, right?
Right.
So they talk about the apocalypse sandwich. It's like John the Baptist was apocalyptic and the early Christian community was apocalyptic. Mm. Therefore, Jesus coming between them was probably apocalyptic. But the only source that we have for John the Baptist being apocalyptic is the gospels. So like, you know, it's this circular argument. It's like, I forget what the like actual formula of that logical fallacy is, but it's like using something to argue its own conclusion with John the Baptist. Because like the only ancient non-Christian historian who mentions John the Baptist doesn't say anything about him being apocalyptic.
I see. I also thought that I might have read something in your book saying that, like, suggesting that, like, it was perceived that way because, like, of, like, the way that John the Baptist, like, promoted, like, asceticism in contrast to, like, Jesus's supposed, like, gluttony, which I love. Yeah. I love that. I love that concept, too.
That's about right.
It's the whole bread and roses thing all over the place. Yeah.
John the Baptist brings the anarchist vibe.
Mm. The anarcho-primitivists.
There's I admit I don't know a lot about the Bible and everything. I mean, like, I know, like, there are obviously like a lot of the conservatives still firmly believe in the apocalypse and talk about things in those sort of terms. Like,
oh man,
is there any sort of indication in any of the Bible or any of the stuff you read that sort of indicates when that would be? Because it seems very odd to now be like over 2,000 years later and still no sign of it.
I think Paul especially assumed it was like any second.
It's always soon. It always feels like it's just supposed to be soon.
Yeah, it seems weird for like we're in a why would there be so much time passing? Like we're like things have changed so significantly since then. It's hard to imagine like what now would be like what now or in the future would be referenced in at that time as the reason why it's happening now or in the future at this point.
Oh man, you aren't raised Pentecostal evangelical like me. Like you should get Christian magazines from like charismatic sources. They list exactly what's going on in the news and exactly how it lines up with what's going on in Revelation.
My mom thought constantly. The same thing. Like she was like, she thought the, like the, you know, like how widespread credit cards were, was an indication that like, you know,
that might be apocalypse is coming.
Like, there's a lot of extrapolation that like, will always kind of fit within whatever area of church.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I'm pretty sure that like people believe that. So like, what was it? There's a verse where it says that God will cover the world in fire. He would flood the world with fire the way he flooded it with water in Noah's Ark. And a lot of people believe that's global warming and climate change.
Yeah.
Is it better, do you think, if they just don't believe in climate change at all, or if they do believe it but think that there's no point in doing anything about
that's where they are. There was a tweet there, someone was like, good news, my mom now believes climate change is real. Bad news, she thinks it's God's plan.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is there
at very least a lateral. I don't think it's backwards though.
In the Bible and in all this history, like, was there any indication of when this is supposed to, Brandon or Jennifer was just saying, like, they got the indication from Paul, I think, that like it was supposed to be any second, like, but is there any indication that's going to be like some completely far flung future, centuries, millennia after God has last intervened at all, apparently? Except
to, there was this tradition that arose that it would happen like before, the first generation of Christians died, right? So like Paul mentions it a couple times that like, you know, the first followers of Jesus, it was supposed to happen like while they were still alive. And like you can tell, and this gets into like how the Bible is kind of in a lot of ways at war with itself, and you see this in the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament. But like, you know, Paul will be like, yeah, so I know some of them died, but some of them are still alive, so it could still happen. Yeah. And then later, as you get into the like epistle to the Hebrews, which was written later and we don't actually know who wrote it, it's attributed to Paul a lot, but we know that he didn't write it and it was written later. That's where you start to see that like, oh, like a day to us could be like millions of years to God. And, you know, there's just no way to know. And it was because that tradition that said that it would happen before the first generation of Christians passed away, that didn't come true. Like they all died and there was still no big eschaton. So they started having to like do these theological reflections to try to, you know, save that earlier tradition. And you even see that with like modern doomsday cults. Like the Seventh-day Adventists started from a group of people in the 19th century, or I think it was the 19th century. They had a prophet who said like, on this date, the world's going to end. And they all gathered. It didn't happen. And then he said, oh no, I calculated it wrong. It's going to be this date. And even more people came and nothing happened. And it just kept going like that until it became like a major Christian denomination. So, you know, those prophecies turning out to be wrong, it doesn't seem to affect people's faith very often.
Do you think that has anything to do, or like, do you think that's related in any way to the kind of like the resurrection? And so I know in your book you kind of mentioned that, like, and this was fascinating to me, this concept that like the resurrection, or what people perceive to be the resurrection, might have occurred like in various instances, like over like a course of years. like rather than like within the 3 days or something like that. Like, I just wonder if the like this kind of this like widespread belief of a resurrection maybe like might have been related to these kind of like failed claims of an impending apocalypse or anything like that. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But.
No, I think here's the thing is there's like we have so little direct evidence of what was going on in that first century that like it's, you know, you can't really say much for sure. But like that sounds very plausible. I would say that, yeah, probably that played a pretty big role in it. You know, I can't like say, yes, this document proves that that's what was happening. But like just in terms of what we do know about that time, yeah, that sounds very probable.
Yeah, the very idea that like the kind of the execution and the resurrection, like, you know, the supposed resurrection is like just the idea that it's even far more protracted than it's initially like laid out in the Gospels is fascinating to me. Like,
right, like about 20 years passed between when Jesus was probably executed and when we have the and when the first letter of Paul that we have was written. And like in the grand scope of history, 20 years isn't that much. But like think about what you were doing in life 20 years ago, right?
Right.
Like,
I was a Republican.
Right. Like that amount of time, so much can happen in the world just in terms of like ideas that people have and like groups they join, where they live. That is in a way a lot of time for people to, you know, iterate on the things that Jesus taught and the things that his first followers believed.
Also, it's not like they have pictures of him to compare to.
Exactly.
I mean, that's one of the things Freud did right before he died was he wrote the book about Moses saying that actually there's two Moseses. Actually, after he went out to the desert and the other guy came back, it's this different guy.
I actually didn't know that.
All of your faces froze for me.
Oh, only your face froze for me.
Yeah, yours is the only frozen one. You look like Hunter S. Thompson right now, too.
It's me. It says you're in. Sorry, everybody.
That's all right.
I'm going to try to sit like normal, have a normal face. So if it freezes again, it
looks normal. Don't move.
I was going to ask you a question, actually, Jennifer, but I guess if you're breaking up.
Okay. No, I can hear everything fine.
Well, I'm curious because like we're talking about the resurrection and everything, and we're talking about all these different things, and I don't actually know where you land on some of these things either, like the resurrection and all. Like, do you find yourself closer to Christian on these things, or?
A little bit closer to Christian, but I'm also like, I think I'm more spiritual. I'm more, I would say, on the resurrection, I don't think that you can say for sure whether or not it happened. I tend to have more belief in like spiritual experiences, divine experiences, not only from my own experience, just like hearing with other people and like growing up Pentecostal, you just hear and see things that seem really unexplainable sometimes. And like even researching like, oh, you know, glycelia can occur. Like, I don't know. I don't like to discount all of human history's experiences with spirituality in general.
Take the more agnostic approach
long story short, I lean more toward the very rational side of things, where it's really hard for me to fathom the idea that somebody comes back from the dead at all. Mm-hmm. But I also wouldn't say for sure that it didn't happen. And I tell my mom that I believe in the resurrection.
You gotta give her something.
Yeah.
We won't bring it up if we bring on the podcast.
But I think, okay, but so... Jennifer, what would you say to the idea? And this is like, this is not like me being a Marxist. This I first encountered when I was reading Marcus Borg, who is like as liberal as they come. But he was like, you know, the resurrection experiences can be real, right? Like in the people who experienced the risen Jesus, it's not like they were lying or like stupid.
Yeah.
But like there's a difference between like an actual corpse, right? Like walking around, like,
yeah,
and like people like having like very intense spiritual experiences. I think Marcus Borg described it as like a numinous experience, kind of drawing on like how Paul says he saw like a big light when he saw the
resurrection. I mean, I've read Marcus Borg a little bit here and there. I think that's I know a lot of people in my circle who believe that are more toward your point of view than the idea. And I definitely think probably that's what I think is what happened. Right. I don't know. I just like the mystery. It's one of those things you, I like, the, I really, really like this like mystical level of like, I like to think of miracles. I like to think of magic kind of things happening. And yeah, I like the idea of people seeing that and like expressing it. And it's not just in Christianity either. I'm a, since I'm a universalist, I think about other sort of miraculous things that happened in other religious traditions. Right now I'm reading the Satanic Verses, which has a really like neat take on what could have happened in like this very, like very, very metaphorical, not literal way of like when Muhammad was founding Islam, and also been watching a lot of Reservation Dogs and like thinking about a lot of like divine spiritual experiences that Indigenous people in America have, just like based on the show. So I think about that a lot, and I think about what resurrection, real or metaphorical, would have meant back in that day. And I think the UCC doesn't have a stance on it, which is the denomination I'm in. Like, I've heard sermons from people who don't believe in literalist resurrections on Easter Sunday, and he just died. Do you know who Jack Shelby Spung? I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. He's from Richmond. I saw him speak once here, and he didn't believe in anything literal.
Yeah,
and that was really influential to me. I didn't agree with all of his stuff, but I definitely think, you know, I tried to personally find validity in Christianity outside of the miraculous stuff. And the only reason I'm even talking about this now, because I don't really talk about like, oh, you know, I believe in Jesus because he was resurrected and that's why he's God or whatever to other people. It's only because you asked me directly, like what I believe.
I think it's fascinating, just like from a non-Christian perspective, that Christianity, like adherence to that religion, can exist without accepting the resurrection as, you know, as fact. I think that's something that like a lot of people who kind of like are maybe wary of Christianity, Marxists in particular, like I think that would kind of be useful information, that you don't have to like align yourself with the pure like dogma of like what Christianity entails. Or has it?
Yeah, sometimes when I tell other Marxists that, they're like, "Well, you're not a real Christian, then you're just a Marxist who likes Jesus." It's like, okay.
Yeah, but like, what does it matter to them if you're a real Christian or not?
Right.
Like, yeah, like either you learn from it or you don't. Like, what can you, you know? That doesn't sound very dialectical.
It's also hard for, I think, people to get published with those perspectives. I know a few people have. If you do it from this academic perspective, then people are more willing to hear it and talk about it. They're like, oh, well, you're just an academic and like you probably don't have any spiritual beliefs whatsoever. So, but people don't always like to hear it from people who call themselves Christians a lot. Sorry to bring up Twitter again, but that somebody was talking about someone who came out and was like, I'm a Christian and I don't believe in the resurrection on Twitter. I don't even remember who it was. And somebody retweeted and it was like, then if the resurrection isn't real, why can't I go rob a store and murder a guy right now?
Holy fucking shit.
Why do people always come to that?
And I'm like, okay, man. That, you know,
So I could do it now, right?
Like, yes. Yeah. Like, for all goodness.
Jesus died for nothing.
I'm not
going to
face any cosmic repercussions for this. It's horrifying. On that
and
note,
I was
though,
like, okay, then the resurrection's real. Like, be
yeah,
normal.
Fine.
Yeah,
fine.
Please don't do that.
It helps you like, believe whatever the fuck you want to just be to contain yourself. On that academic note, though, Christian, like, I know, like, in the intro to The Carpenter's Son and stuff, like, you kind of you make a point to distinguish yourself as really like a proletarian academic. This is not, you know, you didn't have necessarily a degree at this point. This is not like, you're not like kind of like a career academic, which I think is like is fantastic. But like, what was the process of writing this like for you? I mean, you mentioned that like you don't really bring in a lot of like you really kind of like just compile a lot of ideas that have been made by other people, but to even research that is like is a lot of work. How are you able to like to really kind of do this without like the, I guess, the amenities that a lot of like professional academics are like able to enjoy?
So I was lucky that, not lucky, but I had done a lot of the reading, like just on my own before I was planning to write a book, you know. I just like,
okay.
I have barely, in the past like 10 years, I have barely read any fiction. I've read like a couple mm-hmm. of novels. This is mostly the stuff I read because it's the stuff that I find the most like intellectually stimulating, I guess. So like,
mm-hmm. And how long, like you mentioned that you first, like you started like studying Jesus from a historical perspective pretty young. Could you like say like around what age, like this was high school?
High school was when I first started like just reading the Bible a lot, but I think I was maybe 19 when I started like actually studying the historical and stuff like that. I'm 30 now, so it was 11 years ago.
Okay, so yeah, so you've had a lot of time to like research this. This is like part of okay.
And like also, you know, I'm dealing with this a lot in grad because I'm in grad school right now.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
So I am going into that whole academic track now. Nice. But but like, I'm poor. I can't afford like all the books and shit that you need to read. So like,
right.
There are so many. I pirate so many books from the internet. I get people to send me stuff. The Internet Archive has tons and tons and tons of like academic resources that normally you'd have to pay for. So like that stuff all really, really helps.
Have you had any good pushback on anything? Like, not, I don't mean like inflammatory, but like now that you are in grad school, have you had any good critiques about your about any of your perspectives or arguments or anything yet? Has there been anything that's like helped push your ideas further or helped you refine them, you think, yet?
Well, I'm in grad school like just for history, right? Oh, okay. So like I've been studying like the Civil War and so just because like, But I'm about to turn in my thesis next week, and my thesis, I put a lot of like liberation theology stuff into it.
Awesome.
So I'm expecting to get a lot of pushback for the first time.
Do you feel yourself at odds with more like the more bourgeois academia, like of grad school at all? As, like in what you're pursuing?
Definitely. I think that like I hate the pretense of academic neutrality. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I hate the kind of like unspoken rule that like you're not supposed to take a side on historical events, or like if you do, like you have to do it in like a very specific way that kind of detracts from like being a historian, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like I just, those people always end up, and I know that like, you know, for people on the progressive side, especially for, you know, leftists, we know that like to not take a side on things is really to just take the side of the status quo.
Absolutely. But, yeah.
And like even though that's like a truth, like Martin Luther King said something to that effect, like it feels like most of academia has not internalized that.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like academia likes to believe itself to be kind of like just neutral in like its explorations and its findings.
Yeah.
But it's like it's pedagogy. Like you use that like to learn and understand things. And if it's not for liberation, then it is to uphold the status quo. Absolutely.
And like you see it in the way that Marxism is used in academia, because like, you know, right wingers and like cultural war type people, they like to complain about how universities are all Marxist.
Mm-hmm.
And like to an extent, they're not wrong, because like I have never taken a college course where Marx didn't come into it at one point. I mean, except like, you know, like math classes and stuff like that. But like any history or sociology or economics course, at some point you're going to have to deal with Marx or, you know, a Marxist. But like they treat it as like one academic theory among many to just kind of like pick up and put down whenever you feel like it. And like, not that I think it's wrong to like use Marx when you want to, or like to, you know, take those insights, but like Marxism is not supposed to be used that way. It's it's like it's an ideology that's supposed to like be all encompassing, right?
Right.
And that is not how it's treated in academia at all.
Yeah, like they like to think it's like, oh, here you have Marxism here, and then you have all these other ideologies here, and like people pick and choose. But it's like Chase said, I mean, reality is Marxist. Like that can't be helped. It's like it's a framework to really understand like material conditions around you. It's not just something that you get to say like, well, this fits, like right. because I want it to fit. Like it doesn't function that way.
I'm going to repeat some of what y'all said exactly at my communist book. I'm in like this baby, like introduction communist book reading thing here in Richmond. Nice. And like, it's just getting to the point where I'm like, I'm too stupid to be doing this.
No, not at
all. So like, but I will be repeating some of that on Tuesday.
Still, take
on six, I say the Friday before Easter. It's not good, I cried to myself in the pisser. And with you in the front row at the Silver Jew show. And you act like you didn't notice. My fear of the bear that showed his pizza when I was six was overwhelming and not dissimilar to this. Sinking in, laughing at something sunken in I am. If I'm sinking in, laughing at something sunken in I am. If I'm sinking in, laughing at something sunken in I am.